Welcome back to Aspiring Hollywood. Today we're going to talk about writing your first, very first screenplay and the three-act structure and the protagonist. Now, here's stating the obvious. A three-act structure is a story divided into three sections: Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3. Each of these sections are crucial to the structure of how you tell your story. There are certain elements that should be addressed in each act. So, for the purpose of this episode, I will be addressing just a few of those elements. Otherwise, we'd be here for a very long time to talk about all of the intricacies of these elements. But if you're just starting to write a screenplay, this should help you get started at least. So Act 1 actually is the beginning of the story, and it's typically around 30 pages long. Now, it doesn't have to necessarily be 30 pages long. It could be 25 or 32, but the rule of thumb is that it's around 30 pages long. Act 2 is the middle of the story, and it's around 60 pages. Act 2, you can divide into two individual parts so that it's easier to write. Act 3 is the end of the story, essentially. So you have the beginning Act 1, middle Act 2, and Act 3 would be the ending section of the story, and it's typically about 30 pages long. Now, writers must bring certain story elements to light in each of these three acts, as I mentioned before. So in the next few minutes, I'll focus on only a few of those elements of which a writer must be aware. Now, in Act 1, the audience expects to meet the protagonist. The protagonist is the person the viewer watches from the beginning of the story to the end of the story, and for whom they root to achieve the ultimate goal and overcome obstacles, capture the hearts of their love interest, save humanity, live happily ever after, depending on what type of story, what type of genre you're trying to create. You'll achieve your goal of creating a great protagonist when the viewer or the reader of your screenplay can identify with the character you created. The world in which your protagonist lives is another crucial element to introduce. That means that you must show important elements of how the world works for the viewer to understand your protagonist's choices as the story progresses. So, that means that you must show important elements of how the world works for the viewer, right? So the viewer needs to understand how the world works in order to understand your protagonist's choices as the story progresses. Is it a world of corruption? If so, the writer must show an instance or two of how the influential players that populate this world really function. They're immoral, they're corrupt, on the take, and so on. Think of scenes that would illustrate that environment. Is the world you're creating riddled by street crime or gangs or petty criminals? And show that on the page. Or are you writing about a world that is set in a prudent and pleasant environment where the lawn is neatly manicured and the happy faces of the neighborhood enjoy a safe and prosperous life? Well, if that's the case, well, you know what you have to do. You have to show scenes illustrating that world. And you bring your audience into your world by showing a few glimpses of that environment. You have people jogging, sprinkling their lawn, manicuring their little flower bed in front of their homes and so forth. In addition to the world, introduce the inciting incident, another very, 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 very important, a crucial element. Why is this element crucial? It's crucial because it turns your protagonist's life upside down. So let's review really quick. So far we have introduced the audience to the protagonist, and we introduced the audience into the world in which your protagonist lives. And now something happens that throws everything off balance, and that's called the inciting incident. It's important to note that it's not the exciting incident, although sometimes the inciting incident can be exciting. What I'm referring to is the event that occurs somewhere in Act 1, whether in the beginning, the middle, or end of Act 1, that turns your protagonist's life upside down, and it cannot be reversed. For example, let's say that your story takes place in a quiet suburb in the Midwest United States somewhere. It's an upper middle class area where people live in bliss and safety until a murder takes place where? Well, on Bliss Avenue, of course. This murder shakes up the neighborhood to its very core. It's an event that cannot be undone, and it throws the life of your protagonist, who lives in this neighborhood, upside down. So, if it's not a murder, it can be a string of home invasions or robberies, or perhaps the protagonist is diagnosed with a deadly disease, or an accident takes place, or an extramarital affair destroys a marriage. The point is, as mentioned earlier, once this event happens, the characters cannot go back in time to undo it, and your protagonist's life gets thrown off balance. Now, we, as the audience, will spend the next couple of hours watching this character navigate through the maze of obstacles that the writer sprinkles throughout the story. The writer will also introduce the antagonist, or the bad guy or gal, who stands in the way of your protagonist, trying to get their life back on track, getting out of the mess, or saving the neighborhood, saving the world, or winning the heart of a romantic interest, for example. Now, the antagonist is the anti-hero, the unlikely protagonist, or the character who prevents the protagonist from reaching his or her goal. So then the question becomes, how does the viewer identify with the protagonist they watch on screen? And why is that important? Well, it's important because the viewer must like your protagonist, must like this character, because they're going to be spending the next couple of hours going on this journey with this individual. And if they don't like this protagonist, then they don't like the movie. Something seems off. But when the viewers can see themselves in the protagonist of your story and see certain personality traits or mannerisms or relationship dynamics and interactions with others, a powerful connection is formed. This connection not only allows the viewer to relate, but also to deeply invest in the character's journey. The viewer will either consciously or subconsciously yearn for the central character to triumph and achieve the goal of the story. Now, the same way the viewers or readers of your story, depending on what stage your project is, if it's just in the screenplay form, then of course it's the readers of your story, will identify with your character when they want to be like the persona you created on screen or on the page. If your protagonist is bigger than life, strong, muscular, good-looking, and has a twinkle in his eye, he comes across as lovable and popular, well, then most men will want to be like this guy, right? Obviously, most women will probably want to be introduced to this individual. Young boys and teenagers will want to grow up to be like this superhero. Think of all the superheroes that you've seen on the big screen in the past. They're all good looking and they're all very personable and very charismatic. But we'll go more into that because it doesn't necessarily have to be that, by the way. But I'm just giving you an example of what a protagonist can be like. Now, the same thing goes for a female character, right? If the woman is smart, opinionated, strong, and determined, she dresses well and is successful at work and in her relationships, well, most women will want to be like her, right? Who wouldn't be? And it's only human nature. And as screenwriters, it's crucial to acknowledge the power of honesty and observation, right? It's in our human DNA to relate to characters we see on screen, and ignoring this phenomenon would be dishonest writing. To be true to our craft as writers, we must observe the world and recreate it as we see it. We can use what people refer to as creative license to embellish, twist, and fantasize about how different a situation or a person or a world could be. Whether we embellish significantly or we tell the story very close to reality, we must start from a truthful point of view and then mold it to fit the vision or the creative idea that we have for the story. Writers of any genre and medium should first be good observers of life when creating the world. And when creating or developing the character, we must be great psychologists. A talented writer will have the sensitivity to understand the points of view of people from all walks of life. You'll bring your point of view to the story, but always consider and address other perspectives to tell a well-rounded story. A few movies come to mind, but one that sticks out, I'm not going to mention any names, but it's a World War II movie where some of the story is being told from the enemy's perspective. So as a writer, you have to place yourself in the shoes of the enemy to tell their story and what they must have felt, and do your research, right? So read history books and so forth, or interview the the people, if they're still alive, about their perspective and how they saw World War II from their side of the world. Writing fiction is somewhat similar to journalism. Traditional journalists will take the time to investigate the event and the people involved in the event and tell the story with comments and points of view from all sides. Unlike fiction writers, a journalist must remain impartial to the report and maintain the highest degree of honesty and professionalism. While a fiction writer has the latitude to embellish, to take advantage of the creative license I talked about, and tell the story mostly from the writer's point of view, but also, as I just mentioned, be sensitive to the other side. When writing the protagonist, consider their character traits. Make a list of positive and negative attributes. Make a list of weaknesses and strengths this creature you're about to create possesses. Decide on an overall theme for your character. And as I mentioned before, the physical attributes, I'm glad I remember this, the physical attributes, the muscular guy and the twinkle in his eye and all that, it doesn't have to be that. Your character doesn't have to be tall and muscular and handsome, or your heroine, the female character, doesn't have to be the supermodel type, right? As a matter of fact, the closer you keep your character description similar to that of the average person, the more relatable they will be to the viewer. If you think back to these super comic book superheroes, although they are different than your typical human, the writers will always introduce certain character traits that make them human. They deal with perhaps jealousy or not being able to capture the heart of the leading lady. Maybe they deal with loss, right? That's a big deal for humans, you know, the dealing with loss and so forth. And that way, the superhero characters become more relatable to everybody else. The same thing goes for the model citizen type, right? Your protagonist doesn't always have to be the model citizen. Sometimes a protagonist is a thief or a crime boss, but yet the audiences still cheer for them not to get caught or to get away with whatever it is that they're doing. So why is that? I just watched a film the other day, and again, I'm not going to mention the name, but it was about a central character that lost his son to these criminals, and now he's out for vengeance. And, the audiences are expected to go on this ride with this individual as he goes around and he kills everybody that he believes was responsible for the murder of his son. So, is he a model citizen? No, a model citizen would go to police, but that wouldn't make for a good story, right? We want to go on this ride with this vigilante type character and witness all the special effects and everything in the movie. That's what is exciting. Okay, so in summary, when you're developing your central character or protagonist, investigate who they are. Who are these people? Make a list of their background from the time they were born to now. Imagine the protagonist's childhood and how growing up experiences inform what he or she does in your story. Imagine their family's background, their social status, their education level, personal beliefs, religious beliefs, or the lack thereof. And most of these background elements will not make it in the story, but it will inform you when you must make choices for the character. So you may have heard the comment from critics that they liked or disliked the choices an actor makes when portraying a character, or the choices the writer or the director made. If you make choices for your protagonist, or any character in the story for that matter, that are inconsistent with the personality traits and background you presented to the viewers, that's a bad writing choice. So you have to be consistent with what that character might do in a particular situation and what choices they may decide to make when faced with either adversity or something that pushes them towards making a choice. Always make choices consistent with what you've established about your character on page one or in the first act or whenever you introduce that character to the audience and you told the audience the type of character it is. So far, what have we done? In the first episode in this series, I was talking about the premise of your movie, right? That's the, you know, one to three sentences that describes your movie, or the elevator pitch. If you happen to be stuck in an elevator, well, not stuck, but taking an elevator with an executive, a development executive from a studio, do you have a quick pitch that tells your story in three sentences or less that you can pitch while you're in the elevator with that executive? Now, obviously, seldom does that happen, but when you're in an office somewhere, you want to be prepared to be able to pitch quickly, to be able to pitch, like a three-sentence type of pitch, or a two-minute pitch, or a five-minute pitch, or be prepared to pitch, you know, depending on where you are in the progress of selling your screenplay to the studio. You may have to sit there and go through an hour worth of details about your script. But if you're at that point, that means that the studio is pretty serious about purchasing the script and you're there to make that pitch. So we have the elevator pitch, the premise. We just talked about the protagonist and some of the elements of creating the world and introducing the protagonist, the inciting incident as well. And next time we're going to talk about taking it a step further in your writing attempt to write a synopsis, which is just a few paragraphs. So a little more description, beginning, middle, and end. Just a few paragraphs that describe your story a little bit more. Until then, I wish you a happy day and happy writing.